Well, once again, we do have John Voorhees and James Romelli of Option Hacker here with us. You guys have the mic.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anka. So first off, thanks for all of you for joining. We're going to be talking about a topic that was actually kind of the focus of, you know, all of the times that I would come on the Time Research Show. It's unusual options activity. So John, as we go through this, if you want to kind of call out any of the questions that people might be asking, that would be great. We tend to, you know, try to keep things pretty conversational. What we're going to be going through here initially is kind of a more conceptual sort of idea around what unusual options activity is, and then really how you should be thinking about unusual options activity in your general trading workflow, not only if you're just an option trader, but even if you're someone who's day trading and swing trading equities, why this information in that is useful to you. So we're going to jump in here first with a quick risk disclaimer. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but the general gist of it is that none of the trade examples or ideas that we talk about throughout this are intended to be recommendations of any kind. Neither John or myself is a registered investment advisor. For all execution, capital requirement, margin type questions, you should be out to your broker or advisor to get that type of information answered. So first and foremost, as we jump through this, you know, like I said, John and I tend to try to keep things a little bit more conversational throughout the presentation. So don't feel like you need to wait the end to ask any questions about any of the material that we have here. You know, we're the last slide and kind of want to keep things a little bit more, I don't want to say casual, but definitely conversational. So please feel free to interrupt us with any questions that you might have as we go through this. So first and foremost, we want to kind of talk through what unusual options activity and everything that Option Hacker was designed to do revolves around the idea of identifying and creating actionable alerts and insight based on unusual options activity. Are you guys able to hear me well? I just saw one comment from someone saying that the sound is a little off. Sound okay, everybody?
Yeah, you sound pretty good, James. You're just, it kind of fades out every, you know.
Yeah, okay. So I'm trying to let me adjust this really quickly. Okay, cool. Yeah. So just kind of at a raw conceptual level, unusual options activity is not that complicated of a concept to wrap your head around. At its fundamental level, unusual options activity is order flow that's driven by large institutional investment vehicles. And we can all kind of imagine what these institutional investment vehicles are, right? For the most part, we're talking about hedge funds, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, big investment banks. But really, the thing that is sort of missing here in terms of market participants is that high frequency, sort of proprietary derivative trading shop. Generally speaking, those are the market participants that we're not that concerned about. We don't really want to be identifying order flow coming from those types of institutions because typically speaking, their end goals for a specific trade has to do with really complex models that aren't really going to be well translated to the kind of non-professional, non-institutional trading world, right? So, you know, these are trades that have some sort of directional bias and are the net result of some sort of analysis that a institution has done, right? So, you know, what exactly would a institution be using a large block of options to do? And John, maybe you can kind of talk through some of the things that, you know, we tend to see when we talk unusual options activity from that standpoint, the types of positions that these traders tend to put on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, typically, you know, as James pointed out, you're not really looking for something based, you know, on any sort of quantitative trading strategy. But unusual options activity tends to be, you know, really event-based trading that you see from these types of buy-side firms. So, you know, kind of, you know, taking a position like ahead of a drug announcement, ahead of an earnings announcement, or, you know, perhaps like a merger announcement or something like that. So these are really event-based strategies where, you know, the option, the premium buyer is really taking, you know, taking a position based on some analysis that they've done of an event that's going to happen. So, you know, whether or not they may actually have, you know, non-public information, you know, that can, you know, that's who's to say. You know, certainly at times, you know, it would definitely appear as if they do. But these are definitely event-based trading strategies that we're looking
at. Yeah, and I think that I think that that's a good way to kind of characterize it. Typically speaking, big institutional hedge funds are you know, going out into the market with a pretty intensive appetite for risk, right? So when we have a catalyst event, they do some kind of analysis, and you know, a good part of that might be quantitative, but in many other cases, it is based on some sort of insider information. We see that happen all the time when we track unusual options activity, right? You know, you can see these really large orders coming in ahead of an announcement that may have surprised or shocked the market a little bit. It doesn't take that much of a stretch to imagine that institutional traders have some of that information available to them before that announcement is made, right? And we hear about these things in the news all the time. But I think one of the other things that we sort of tend to overlook about unusual options activity is that even if we remove that sort of insider information component of it, and I am not going to stop the presentation to do this, but I am always super curious to kind of see what people's general thoughts are about this. If you think that on a regular basis, institutional traders are using inside information that is non-public and, you know, not something that they should be, at, you know, placing actual trades against, if you think that that happens on a very regular basis, just, you know, put a little check in the chat here. I'm just always curious to see what people's perception of, you know, how that actually comes to life in the market, what that perception really is. Because, you know, in reality, we see the occasional news headline about unusual activity ahead of an announcement or something like that, that then does actually bear out into some kind of insider trading base. But the vast majority of the time, nothing really comes of it. Someone makes a trade. If they're not too greedy, they tend to get away with it for the most part. But removing that, and that's definitely a big part of unusual options activity, right? So if we're trying to identify hedge fund order flow, we're doing it because, yes, they do sometimes tend to have inside information, but we're also doing it because institutional traders in general, when you remove that, still have a distinct advantage over the average retail or non-professional trader. And we can kind of break that advantage out into a couple of different buckets. And I think that all these things kind of play together, create the institutional vehicle that is super difficult to compete with as a non-professional or non-institutional trader, right? Capital, manpower, and technology. These are all things that as a non-professional, we really just cannot compete against, right? Capital tends to lend itself to, you know, margin considerations and the ability to put on positions that, you know, we would not be able to replicate necessarily. And technology and manpower kind of work hand in hand, right? And we talk a lot about tool sets and things that individual traders can access to kind of increase their ability to digest information, to identify signals, to comb through news. And all of those things are super valuable, but I think there's something that's sort of fundamentally different about how someone like us would access that information and leverage those tools versus an institution. And it really just has to do with manpower and the number of hours that we all have available to comb through that stuff, right? You know, if we think about the wealth of public information out there, how many hours per week do you all spend? And I would like you all to answer this just because we want to see kind of on average what that looks like. How many hours per week do you all spend doing research or let's say kind of outside of market hours where you're not actually being executional, combing through news, reading reports, looking at articles, doing chart analysis, you know, looking at trends, reading macro things. You know, some people might not spend any time. Some people might spend a fair amount of time, right? You know, I've heard some traders who work at home who spend an additional 30 or 40 hours a week outside of market hours doing that type of work. And really, you know, and so I see someone say here 10 to 12 hours, right? And that's commendable. That's super commendable, right? You're definitely better off for it. I think you see a lot of people kind of in this 8 to 12 hour range. Definitely better off for it, right? But even if you're spending 100 hours a week, you're still limited by the fact that you're just one person, right? Like you cannot ever expect to have the same bandwidth for consuming that information, analyzing it, and turning it into actionable results as a team of quantitative, qualitative analysis analysts at a hedge fund who all have PhDs are able to do, right? So even with the same tool sets, it's very difficult to produce that same output, right? So what can we do then to hope to compete with these institutions? And I think compete is kind of a little bit of a misnomer as well, right? You know, that sort of implies that, you know, we're out there in the marketplace trading head to head against these institutions, and that's not necessarily how it works, right? I think a better way to characterize characterize it is, okay, how can we hope to at least have or replicate a win rate that is closer to what they're doing relative to the rest of the trading public, right? And John, maybe you want to talk a little bit about how, you know, institutional traders, generally speaking, have a little bit of an easier time in the market than your average retail trader for all those reasons that, you know, we just sort of outlined.
Yeah, sure. I mean, even if you are trading like a catalyst-driven strategy or an event-based strategy, and this reminds me of a conversation, James, you and I had going into some sort of earnings announcement where it was like, or I think it was actually a Fed announcement, but, you know, with unusual options activities more relevant to earnings. And I think you had said, well, even if I knew what the Fed was going to do, you know, I wouldn't know how to trade it. And that can kind of be translated to, you know, going into like an earnings announcement. Let's say you know those numbers, you know, it's a whole lot easier to pick the right expiration and, you know, the right strike price with an option if you have a team of 8 quants backing you up as a portfolio manager. I mean, I think typically on a trading desk in an institution, you know, you have a portfolio manager, you have a trader, one or two traders, and then you probably have 5-6 analysts as opposed to just being one person at home. You know, and at the same time, you have all kinds of technology, you know, aside from just a Bloomberg terminal, but there's so many services available these days in terms of, you know, alternate data, for example. I mean, there's companies that serve as hedge funds that, you know, literally will look like, you know, for example, take CarMax, you know, they'll look at satellite imagery to see, you know, how many cars are moving from the lot, moving off the lot. So when you have access to just such sophisticated research tools, even if you aren't, you know, in any sort of gray area in terms of what you're doing, in terms of, you know, legality, as an institution, you know, the access to resources and technology like that, when you're, you know, managing hundreds of millions of dollars, is much more than any individual trader can really have access to.
So totally, and I'm glad you actually mentioned that CarMax example, and that's something that, you know, I think is a really good example that illustrates and buttons up well what the point that we're trying to make with this is, that's, you know, a piece of information and a data source that is definitely well outside of what we would consider, you know, your quote unquote standard things that, you know, the average trader would look at ahead of a catalyst like earnings. But, you know, even if you did have access to that information, which, you know, the scale of the trading operations that you're doing probably doesn't make it practical to even purchase something like that, do you really have the time in the context of the rest of your life and the rest of your trading activities to sift through something that like esoteric and sort of in the weeds within the context of everything else you have going on? No, you probably don't, right? Like the institution definitely does because of all the reasons that John just illustrated. So all of these advantages that they have net out to higher win rates for institutional traders on average compared to your retail non-professional trader, right? So this is the problem that Option Hacker was trying to solve for. So if we can't replicate the same output, even if we did have all of the same inputs that they did from a data perspective, from a, you know, tool set perspective, we know that it's going to be really difficult to turn that into the same output just because of the man hours and the manpower that they have to do that, but also because there is then, going back to that inside information component, there often is things that they know that they shouldn't, right? And, you know, that's an example of something that even if you did have access to that, like, you wouldn't want that information. You wouldn't want to know those things or have someone tell you those things ahead of a catalyst, because if you ever got caught, it would be a, you know, really bad situation for you and anyone else that traded off of that same information, right? So in the effort to create something that kind of gets us that same output, this is where Option Hacker was born. And what Option Hacker does is distills down all of the unusual options activity that you see in a day into actionable insights and alerts based on institutional order flow. So it's a tool that your average non-professional trader, retail trader, non-institutional trader can use to dissect all of that institutional order flow, like a professional or institutional trader would, right? And maybe, John, you can talk a little bit about how kind of the exchange landscape looks just in equity derivatives, generally speaking, and, you know, why it's kind of a challenge to distill all this information down into something actionable before we actually kind of dive into the weeds on how we go about doing that.
Sure, absolutely. And just one more thing on kind of the technology side of these institutions, just because I think it's cool going back along that CarMax example. There's actually a firm here in New York where I'm based now called Yipit Data. And they actually, what they do is they comb the web for analytics in terms of like where consumers are going and what they're putting in their shopping cart to generate data on revenue pre-earnings analysis. And they do a whole host of other things. But that's sort of the technology that these institutions have access to. There's another one that was really cool too. And this is called Pre-Data. And what they do is they actually comb social media commentary to, predict events. And they have this way of doing it. It was started by some guys out of Princeton. I've met with these guys too. The CEO, he used to be in the IT department of Chicago Trading Company, a big market maker in Chicago. But what they do is they analyze, and as this like social media, they have metric for, you know, how frequently topics are being discussed, and also, you know, how divisive they are and how contested these topics are. And they have all sorts of bias. I mean, financial services and institutions, are a really big segment of that. But apparently they've been able to predict with just like an extraordinary degree of accuracy North Korean missile launches, to the point where, you know, they've been retained by the U.S. government service. And also, I think like labor disputes, like they've predicted some Chilean miners, right? This is kind of the technology that, hedge funds and institutions like that are able to use the resources they have at their disposal. So it's really becoming increasingly sophisticated. In terms of the exchange landscape and what it means to, how you can track option orders through that, it's a pretty complex process with stocks, of course, with just outright stocks, dark pools exist. So if you look on, Yahoo Finance, you see that Apple trades 200 million shares in a single day. I mean, that number might be close to 300 million because it doesn't take into account upstairs or off exchange liquidity. You might have, 0.72 buying a block of shares from JP Morgan. And, that's not passing through an exchange because it's a large block of shares and they don't really want to disrupt the market price. With options, no dark pools exist. So all of those orders must pass through an exchange. And, while there's been a little bit of consolidation in the exchange landscape, I mean, I think there's about 13 option exchanges today. So what you have to do to actually have this data that Option Hacker provides is you have to have a data feed from all of those exchanges monitoring the orders that pass through, and then you need to filter that accordingly. I mean, if in its raw format, Option Hacker, you couldn't read anything because it would be too fast for the human eye, because literally every single option order would appear on the screen, so it would just be a blur. I mean, from a one lot to a 10,000 lot, it would all appear, and that's where the filter comes in.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that again segues nicely here. The net output of all of those kind of crazy data points, and Bob, we will answer your question here in the next slide, but the net output of all of those data points is always still the same thing. It's just a trade, right? Like they do this analysis, they stitch together data from all these disparate sources, and all of those things that John just described, those alternative data sources, that might be something that a hedge fund pays, a couple $100,000 for per year to get access to, right? Not something that, yeah, definitely. Not something that any of us are going to be able to do, right? I cannot say that buying, a social listening service is going to, like, how much would I have to be investing to get my return on that upfront cost of the data, right? And it's not even going to be directly impactful enough on its own, my trading activity, to ever even hope of getting that back, right? So what we've done is created this piece of tech that allows us to filter and distill down those outputs, which is the actual trades, to the ones that matter. And all of this is being signaled in real time. What we have here is actually an example of sort of what unfiltered activity would look like throughout the course of the day. And the actual amount of orders that are on the screen right now is about what you would see with a fairly open sort of filter filtering criteria. So in this specific example, we're only filtering out orders that are below 1,000 lot and in stocks that are kind of listed across major exchanges. If we look at this little snapshot here, this is probably like about 10 minutes worth of activity with those specific filters. So think about this happening all day long, this much information coming through, buys, sells, calls, puts, complex spreads, different types of orders that are tied to stock or not tied to stock. Even this is going to be something that is extremely difficult for someone to sort of distill down into an actionable amount of information, right? You all take a look at this. And
sorry, James, go ahead. We had a question from Bob here, and he says, what's the time lag between order flow, actual order flow, and the time you get it to announce unusual
activity? Yeah, so to answer that question, Bob, essentially it's happening in real time. As soon as an order is actually cleared through the exchange, that order and the information surrounding that order, all of the little details that went with it, which we'll talk about in a couple of slides here, is public information immediately. So the latency with which it actually hits the scanner like this is going to be under a couple of seconds, right? At the very most. And so it's
I think it's under a second, isn't it?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, that can sort of, like, you know, if you have a pretty terrible internet connection, it might increase to a couple seconds, but
sure.
Yeah, for the most part, the latency is very, very tight, really, and really quick.
It's also important to note here, I mean, Option Hacker really at its core is an institutional tool. It's really on every desk on the street. And what we're doing is we're providing filters. So
So this, what we have on the screen here is an example of what that sort of institutional version of the tool would look like. And what we've done is pre-sort of programmed the scanner to boil down a handful of trades that are executed during the day, so we can alert them to the subscriber base based on a set of criteria that we've set forth within the scanner. And that criteria is based on filtering out all of the noise that you saw on the previous slide to get to information that we can actually use to make trades. So what we have here, and this is, you know, what we saw on the previous slide was about 10 minutes worth of activity in a random trading day. What we have here is a complete snapshot of all of the signals that came across Option Hacker in one specific trading day, right? So here we have a total of 6 alerts, right? And it's not to say that all 6 of these alerts are, you know, automatically going to be profitable trades, but based on the information that we have identified about the specific order, these are the 6 trades in that day out of the thousands and thousands of trades that were executed that were large relative to the average volume that you tend to see in those names and met all of the criteria that we're seeking to identify to really pull out the best and most actionable orders, right? So this is exactly kind of what the interface looks like. We'll dissect a little bit what each of these individual data points within all of the different alerts actually mean, but this is exactly what it looks like when you log into it. It runs automatically. You don't need to know anything other than your login and password to activate this. You essentially just open it up. It starts to scan the market in real time. As soon as an order that meets the criteria is executed by an institutional trader, it'll make a sound, flash this alert, and you can go ahead and execute that trade, use it to the information to build a spread, or, you know, do a little bit further analysis, which is actually typically how people use the tool. It's kind of a jumping off point for other trading ideas. And we'll talk a little bit further into the presentation about how you can actually use this information to kind of generate trading ideas for actual raw equities rather than the derivatives if you're not someone who's, you know, really into trading options outright, or, you know, you don't have the commissions to do so. This information is still super valuable because it expresses the, like, raw directional bets that institutions and hedge funds are making on specific individual equities, right? So let's jump in here and kind of talk a little bit about how we actually distill down all of this information into actionable alerts and why we've picked the criteria that we have to do that. that, right? So there's thousands of orders that come across the day in a day. And I think on average, you know, done even at a pretty loose filtering criteria, you know, looking at like 1,000 lots and above and opening positions only, I think we tend to track like between 1,500 and 2,000 orders a day that meet just that criteria, right? And so it's piles and piles of data that, you know, you really couldn't practically expect to consume and sort of, absorb into actionable ideas throughout the course of the day. It's just not possible, right?
Sure, so, sure. Yeah, because I mean, the original purpose of the tool in the institutional sense isn't so much to look for unusual activity or really look for unusual activity at all. It's more to see what's trading in any given market session, you know, so you can structure your prices accordingly on like a sell side trading desk, really. So you know what's moving in the market, you know, and it's designed as a dual sales trader.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the institutional version of this is not something that really has, you know, the directional trader in mind, right? It really is kind of about picking apart supply and demand and activity for those that are doing more complicated things than us, right? Those that are making markets in these option series, those that have much more complex trades, and, you know, those that have large orders that they have to get executed want that level of detail and the ability to sort of search around through all of the order flow in a given day, but it's not really that helpful for the non-institutional traders. So we've developed a number of criteria to set against all of that institutional order flow throughout the day to get to those six alerts. And it's not six every day. You know, it really depends on the trading day. We don't limit the number of signals that the tool produces. It's all based on order flow, actual executed trades from institutional traders that meet the criteria that we've established. And this is some examples of the criteria that we use, and we'll talk about some of the main and more important ones a little bit further, but this is a handful of the things that we use to generate a signal. But it all revolves around average daily volume for underlying stocks and options, how the size of this specific institutional trade compares to the average trade sizes that you tend to see and the average total daily volume that you tend to see. What is the option delta and expiry? Are we looking at an order that's part of a spread or something that's a little bit more longer term in its focus? So these are all things that we try to pull out of the order flow to figure out, you know, what is the actual sort of motivation behind a trade. And the first thing that we want to take a look at is what number of shares a stock trades in a day. Typically speaking, we're never going to see meaningful unusual options activity, excuse me, in something like the SPY, the XLF, or the Qs, or the VIX, or the SPX, or the OEX. These are symbols that have massive amounts of order flow throughout the day, every single trading day. They're some of the most heavily traded names. And you can kind of think about like the really, really large names in the equity space that do a ton of volume. It's really difficult, one, for there to even be an order that is unusually large, right? Because there's so much activity in the name to begin with, like it would take a massive block trade to really kind of get anyone to take a second look at the volume and say, hey, that's actually pretty unusual. I mean, I've seen on any given day, I've seen 100,000 lot spreads transacting in the SPY that really doesn't even move the needle at all, right? So what we tend to look for and where we tend to see the best and most actionable ideas come from is actually against names that don't trade quite as much on a given day, right? So if we're looking at an equity that only trades a couple 100,000 shares per day, the net effect and sort of the stance that you can say a trader is taking when they buy 10,000 out of the money calls in that name is way stronger and a lot more, we can say with more confidence that that's unusual and more likely represents a straight up speculative bet versus a hedge or, you know, a more complex sort of position because that volume is a little bit thinner, right? It's also more significant relative to the rest of the open interest, relative to the rest of the activity that happens in that name. So this is something that we keep in mind and, you know, really is a big part of filtering criteria that we use. So even though this is a scanner that identifies options trades, the stock volume is also important. And if this wasn't obvious enough as we've been talking through this, really kind of the core thing that we're looking at is how large is this trade relative relative to the average daily volume that we tend to see in the options market for that specific equity, right? So every single stock that has listed options, we can see what the average daily options volume is for that specific name, right? If we then identify a block trade that is large relative to that average daily volume, we would consider that unusual options activity, right? And kind of what I just described before, not every really large options order, even if it is large relative to volume, is something that's going to be actionable from a directional sort of speculative approach. And John, maybe you want to talk a little bit about, like, you know, what hedge funds and institutional traders, you know, might be doing that isn't speculation if they came in and buy a 10,000 lot of out of the money calls, right? That's something that we want to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, I mean, like the 10,000 out of the money calls, I mean, that has the potential to troll, what, a million shares of stock. So, I mean, in a thinly traded name that may only trade, you know, 1 or 2 million shares a day, that's really going to move the stock. And outside of that, the market maker who sold the calls and then becomes short the calls is going to need to buy stock himself to make his position delta neutral. So at that point, you're going to get a pop in the stock itself. So, I mean, when you look at thinly traded names and things that have, under, say, 5 million shares a day in the daily float, you're going to really find some particularly meaningful options trade, over a period of time.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of like exactly the point we're trying to make about, you know, looking at the volume comparisons between options and equity volume in a given day to pull out what is actually going to be considered unusual. But more so, you know, I think what we're trying to say is, like, not every large options order is necessarily something we would want to trade actionably, right? Even if someone comes in and buys a massive block of out-of-the-money calls relative to the average daily volume, that doesn't necessarily mean that hedge fund expects the stock to move higher, right? They could potentially be buying those options as a hedge against a large short stock position, which in every, you know, best case scenario, that hedge fund is hoping that those options go to zero because they want the stock to move lower, right? So in that instance, we wouldn't want to follow that type of activity, right? That's the opposite of what we're looking to do. We wouldn't want to buy those calls that actually represent a hedge because the institutional trader behind it is expecting for that stock to move lower. So that's kind of about what the delta analysis that we do hopes to solve for, and also what some of the rest of the volume comparisons do as well. So we filter out trades that have too high or too low of deltas relative to what we would consider sort of a normal speculative bet. Generally speaking, when a institutional trader buys really, really high delta options, it could be like a stop replacement strategy or something like that. If they buy really low delta options, floor traders used to call those rips. They're basically, you know, like ripping up money. They buy them for risk management considerations. They buy them for considerations about balancing their exposure to some options Greek that really doesn't have any kind of relative meaning to a non-professional or institutional trader that doesn't have the same complexity of an order book that they do. So we remove all that stuff that doesn't represent unusual options activity from that perspective. And all of that brings us down to speculative order flow. This is what we want to see. We want to see the speculative bets that these institutional traders are making in the equity options market. And this is easier said than done, right? All of these criteria is what allows us to get to that point, because the majority of options market participants are hedgers, right? They use the equity options market to protect their equity positions, protect their futures positions, the complex investment strategies that they're deploying. And none of that activity is going to give us anything, you know, we hope to execute against, right? It's just not going to be that useful. Hedging can happen with calls and puts, right? So it's really important that if we're looking for activity that represents the best opportunities, or at least identifies stocks that institutions are thinking are going to go higher, that we filter out all of that call activity that could represent a hedge. So we also remove anything that represents a longer term bet on a stock. Generally speaking, these are not the best signals for this type of approach to trading. One, they're very premium heavy. When you take a look at an option that doesn't expire for a year or more, the amount of time premium that you're paying as part of that overall trade is really, really high. and kind of inflates the risk of the position, because there's just so much time left that it's really difficult to say for sure, you know, where something might end up. And also, the further out that the institution goes, the less likely they are to be right. And it's also much less likely that they are, you know, making a bet that's based on some sort of insider information or more immediate catalyst event, right? It's not to say that institutions that use really long dated options are wrong more often than not. I'm sure that there's a lot of validity behind that type of approach if you're really interested in super long-term equity options trades, but that's not really who Option Hacker was designed for. Designed for the trader who is more so focused on day and intermediate swing trade types of approaches. So all of the signaling is designed around that, filtering down to the orders that represent the best opportunities when in that approach. Does this all make sense to everybody so far? Are we all following along? Any questions? Anyone totally lost? Totally fair to say if you are. No judgment from John or myself. I think that one of the things around unusual options activity as a concept that can trip people up is the you know, options component of it, essentially, right? Like, not everybody is an options trader. There's a lot of complexity around the way that they move and the way that they behave that I think is sort of off-putting to those that don't understand. But I also think that, you know, for someone who's interested in options in general, unusual options activity is sort of a really good way to kind of break into that market and learn a little bit more, because, you know, at a conceptual level, it's pretty simple. We're looking for trades that big hedge funds have put into place, saying whether or not they think a stock is going to go higher or lower in a short period of time or an intermediate period of time. And it's kind of easy to translate that sort of thesis into an equity trade on the underlying stock or into a simple options trade. But I think that really it's a good way to kind of break into options in general and get an understanding of the market, even if you're not someone who's, you know, a quote unquote options person. So yeah, if we're all good here, we'll move on to talk through an actual alert example here. So John, maybe you want to talk through some of the pieces of info that actually come through in a single given trade alert on Option Hacker, and, you know, why we care about this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So right here, you see this is 1104 NEPT August 6 strike calls traded at 35 cents. And here you see the price target that we put in for these calls. And what's this? You see the green, it says with bull swing trade, it says green for bought. And what is bull swing, James, for our audience here?
Yeah, so in all of the Option Hacker sort of set of materials, we explain what some of this taxonomy means. In this case, the bull swing alert that's appended this specific signal identifies it as a bullish swing trade potential opportunity, right? And that's actually something that the scanner makes a determination on based on a couple of different things. The directional bias of the actual trade that the institutional trader did and the time to expiration, right? So, you know, let's say that this specific order actually hit with a option that expired at the end of the week as opposed to August. And we'll go through an example. This specific order actually hit on July 8th, so about a month ago. And we picked this one specifically because these options just expired this past week. But let's say this hit with an expiration that was the end of the week as opposed to, you know, the expiration here that was about a month away. It might say bull day trade rather than bull swing.
Yeah, you can also see, you know, the calls have a 43 delta, also provide the stock price for reference and a link to the chart so you can kind of get a feel of where the stock has been moving prior to the option trade hitting the tape. You see open interest as well, 633. So, you know, this is a pretty unusual order we see here in NEPT.
Yeah, and some of the other things that you see here, someone asked, you know, what the date of this NEPT signal was. It was July 18th, and we'll actually kind of break down what happened after this signal actually hit the tape in the following slides here. But basically, what we have here is all of the relevant information about this specific signal. Anything that you would want to know before you kind of dove a little bit deeper into picking apart whether or not this is something that's actionable. One of the things that Option Hacker spits out with each specific signal is also sort of a small little, I think, rough trading plan, essentially, based on a pretty standard sort of approach of stop loss with three targets. This is by no means meant to be a recommendation for how the trade should be managed. It's just something that, based on kind of a standard stop loss and profit factor approach to this, one could use. And in this specific instance, it spits out the three targets that, or I'm sorry, the four targets that could be used, but also, you know, a stop loss that could be put into place with a reasonable sort of risk ratio relative to the profit that one would get if all four of those signals were hit. But if we take a look here at sort of what the net result of this was, this specific option, if you can see here, was bought on the 18th right here. This is a 4-hour bar. Options charts can be a little wonky because they don't tend to trade as with volume as smooth as equities. So we really can't suss out too much when we look at something like a 5-minute bar. But here we have a 4-hour bar for the specific option. And you can see that after these were bought, they ripped higher. 35 cents is exactly what the institutional trader paid for this order. And by the end of that same day, the option traded as high as 60 cents, which is a very nice return over the course of just one day. However, this was identified as a potential swing trade opportunity. And we can see that the high after these were bought was 90. Now, the stock actually ended up pulling back before expiration. These options, if held through expiration, would not have been profitable. But if held through with the targets outlaid here that Option Hacker provided, the first three would have been hit. It would have been hit the same day, and it would have taken a couple of other days, maybe the next day before that final target would have been hit. So someone would have been out of this before they pulled back. And you can really kind of see that, you know, this institutional trader identified this opportunity, made this rather large trade. You know, if we kind of try to back out like what their profit was here, they bought 1,004 of these at 35 cents. So it was about $35,000 in all in for this position. By the end of that day, they had already pocketed $25,000 in unrealized gain, right? And not even higher than that through the life cycle of the trade. And it's something that we saw the stock respond to pretty much immediately as well, right? This was actually the first signal that hit that day on Option Hacker NEPT very early on in the morning. And you can see here, the stock actually ripped from that point for the next few days. So this is kind of an example too of how, you know, this is something that can be relatively easily translated into an actionable sort of alert for the equity itself if someone isn't really comfortable with options or like that doesn't have the, like, you know, account permissions per se to trade options. This is for sure also something that, you know, a trader could approach. And like, this is how, you know, I personally tend to approach these things really from a day trade or swing trade setup. You know, the approach is relatively simple. With options, you always know what the downside is of a specific trade. They can't be worth less than zero, which is actually why I tend to approach things from the options market rather than the equity market. Margin-wise, it's also something that doesn't really quite take up as much capital to do. Compared to equities, can take a lot of cash on hand to hold a equity position that's of any kind of meaningful size. But here we have two trade setups that, you know, from a day or swing trade perspective would have worked out totally fine. I think that one of the things that is worth calling out here is that, you know, like I said, there's not every single signal is not going to be something that's actionable, but we still have to do a little bit of work once we have this information in hand. Like you can see here, this is a pretty reasonable expectation, right? Like they come in and make a really big and really bullish aggressive bet, and we see that this stock had been trending higher for 4 days before they even came in to do this. You know, we have a lot more confidence in the signal, not just because of the institutional order flow, but, you know, that institutional trader is coming in and essentially saying very loudly via this unusual option, hey, this trend is solid. I expect it to continue, and I'm putting on an aggressive options position to capitalize on that. And it all worked out for them. Yeah? So very straightforward there. Does anyone have any questions about the example that we just went over or anything that we've touched on so far? Questions. Okay, cool. So That essentially wraps up a lot of what we wanted to cover off on today. What Option Hacker is at its core is a powerful scanning platform for any trader's toolkit. The team behind this, and there's a lot more people that are responsible for Option Hacker existing besides John and myself. Collectively, the team that developed this software has over 50 years of trading and programming experience. And these, how long is the duration between buyer option purchases and your alert going out? Okay, yeah, KJ, you might have jumped in a little bit late. We talked about this a little bit earlier. The delay is negligible, right? As soon as the scanner itself is bidding out everything in real time, so typically it's under a second. If you have like really poor internet, it might be like 2 seconds, but it's very fast. For the majority of people, the latency is not something you should be concerned with, right?
Like if we take under 500 milliseconds. Typically, with a good internet connection, we'll get an exact figure for that next time.
Yeah,
a lot of people have asked that. And we
For all intents and purposes, like it's exactly real time, right? From the perspective of how we leverage the tool and how anyone should be leveraging the tool, like it's very much real time. And for the most part, kind of the signals that we identify, right? Like the specific signal for this NAPT example, right? Like this is not something that you absolutely had to be sitting in front of the screen as it hit to take advantage of. As you can see, like this thing tended to trend really well for several days after the order hit. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But these are things that we're currently reevaluating and shifting the signal requirements, the filtering criteria. All of that is something that we change around based on market conditions. This is the first time ever really that something like this was made available to retail traders and non-institutional traders. This type of software, as John alluded to before, is something that is leveraged on pretty much every single institutional options trading desk in the world. It's information that they're really, really focused on. And what we've done is created the platform to turn it into something that you can actually use, and traders that are not in that position of the institutional trader can take advantage of condensing it down into really easy to read and really digestible signals that are alerted to you in real time throughout the course of the day. So
how many, Bob asked, how many alerts per day, per week, James? And while that varies, you know, what would you say? The average is what, around 25, 35 per week?
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty decent guess. Like under 10 or so per day is pretty standard. But really, Bob, like it's kind of difficult to answer that question because it's all based on market conditions, right? Like because this is happening in real time, like I said, we don't limit the number of signals that the tool generates on a daily or weekly basis. It's all based on all of those criteria that we talked through. So if there's 50 orders in a day that meet that criteria, which is highly, highly unlikely. like I said, we took a look at the example from before where we boil this down to a handful of signals per day, but that doesn't mean that there can't be more or less than that on an average day. But I think that John hit the nail on the head there. That's probably about what we would expect. Yeah.
The idea is with the filters to have it really be under 10 a day of the most meaningful. So it's really an easily digestible number of actionable trade ideas.
Right. And that's kind of the point. So like in a given day, we might see, several thousand trades based on some of those really loose criteria that I detailed earlier. Of those several thousand trades, there might be, 100 or so that are even worth a second look. Of those 100 that might be worth a second look, there's probably about 10 or so that, could actually represent something actionable. And that's what we're trying to boil down to using the criteria and the filters.
Yeah, and the other kind of thesis behind this is that with proper risk management, let's say you take half of those 10 trades, the idea being that, while they might not all be winners, you may, let's say you take 4 out of 10, the one that does pay off in the end, you'll still be net profitable, even if, the other one don't work out. So that's kind of the other idea here, that with the unusual option activity, the trades that actually do go in your favor tend to go there, very well, whereas, of course, it is options, so ones that might not work out, you do have pretty limited downside risk.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to keep taking questions, but we do have a special offer for a trial of Option Hacker. So right now, what we're offering is for 1 month access to the scan scanner, and it's something that you can log into on a daily basis. You're able to get 1 month of that for $99. With that, we include a workshop and training video, along with a trading plan, blueprint, and cheat sheet. So essentially, what you get is like an activation pack that has all of these things included in them. So as you go through and start to ramp up on the tool and learn how to use it, you have all of these things that are very useful in guiding your progress through that. So the example that we just picked apart, we talk about what all those different numbers mean, how they're relevant to you, where you should be looking at them. We talk about how you can adapt the signals against a trading plan for equities or for the outright options that you see hitting the tape. And we also have a collection of videos that you get access to that sort of explains everything that you would need to know about this. So I don't know if there's a link in the chat here for everybody. I'm having a little bit of trouble doing that. Yeah, so we'd love to take more questions. John, if there's anything you wanted to add, feel free. But you know, as he does that, if you guys have any more questions that you want to put here in the chat box, we'd be happy to continue to chat through this. I think our slot was meant to run to 3 o'clock Eastern here, so we definitely still have a couple minutes left. If you guys have any other questions, comments, anything you want to talk about relative to the things that we just covered, anything at all, guys?
Yeah, looks like we do have one question here. Someone asked, could you mention the date of that NEPT signal again?
Yeah. So that was the 18th last month. Alrighty, guys. So yeah, definitely a good opportunity here.
Software monitor after hours or overnight trading?
No, it does not. And there's a very specific reason for that. It's because equity options markets do not trade in after hours or overnight. So there's no activity to see. Stock does trade, obviously, in an extended session. Equity options don't. I think we would certainly love it if they did.
Yeah.
I think that if they had an overnight session, there would be amazing, unusual options activity signals to come out of that, because I feel like it's probably where institutional traders would try to sneak in a lot of the insider info orders that they do. But because the trades during the day, this does a daily monitoring from open to close, and then at the end of the day, at the beginning of the following day, we spit out a summary of the previous day as well.
Bob has one more question, which I like, and he says other educators have indicated institutional traders cannot trade stock under $12. Is that true?
You know what, Bob? I actually don't know the answer to that. I've never heard that before. There's definitely some sort of, and policy is the wrong word, some funds will sort of have it written into their prospectus that they won't hold stocks under $5 or something like that. I've heard that before. But one
not
of the five, things...
Not 12. I'm checking with somebody I know.
Yeah. 12 seems oddly specific, but typically speaking, though, I actually really do appreciate the question, though, because it gives us an opportunity to make a valid point of that. No, in the instance, like, if that were true for an institution, like the fund did have that sort of limitation to them, they would approach this with the option then, right? Like, if they can't hold the equity outright but want to take a position, they wouldn't have a choice but to go through the options market to put that position on, right? So, you know, I don't think that, you know, for funds that might have that sort of restriction, if they do, it's really all that relevant to unusual options activity and flow tracking the way that we're approaching it, if that makes sense.
I would imagine that the limitation is that I think there's probably a broad limit somewhere around $5 for those managing outside capital, and you know, there may be a discretionary limit on a firm-to-firm basis set up by their clients or risk management department or what have you, but I don't think $12 seems rather high to me.
Yeah.
But I'm looking into it right now. That's a very good question.
I'm more so just curious. I'm like more so curious for my own knowledge now, you know.
Bob, if you want to type your email in once I hear back from the couple of sources I'm polling on this, I will get back to you, because I am curious to see what we hear there. So we will get back to you on that. And do you send alerts if an active option alert is closed by the buyer?
Yep. So there's nothing in the scanner right now that does set off an alert if there's closing activity. Essentially, we're really concerned with identifying opening orders specifically. Because, you know, we're not considering every single signal like a totally actionable alert, like we still do want to take a look and do a little bit of research once these things hit to make sure that, you know, it aligns with the trends that we're seeing broadly and overall. The issue is that mostly when institutional traders are looking to exit a position, they're not necessarily going to do it in one big chunk, right? Their approach is probably a lot closer to kind of the trading plans that come along with the alerts, right? Where they're piecing out of an order as it moves higher. With that said, right, I think there is also a lot of validity behind the thought that they might not actually exit the option itself, but manage that delta exposure by trading the stock. So, you know, like I said, this is not meant to be like a magic bullet, right? This is something that gives you alerts and ideas that are jumping off points that you can then, you know, work into your personal trading plan, your personal, you know, risk appetite, your kind of general overall strategy. All righty, guys. John, you want to put the link in there one more time for these guys?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we're basically at time here, guys. Thank you all for the questions and everything. Just again, really quickly here, we're offering a trial to Option Hacker at a discounted price. This gives you access to all of the materials and supplement materials. And actually, this is worth mentioning as well. Even if you choose not to renew the subscription, you still get to keep all that stuff, which, you know, I think is useful information and really good educational stuff around unusual options activity and options trading in general. So a little bit of a value add there. But definitely something that strongly recommend you give a shot. If you're interested in unusual options activity, you found anything that we went through today intriguing, would really, really recommend giving it a shot. $99 is a pretty low risk barrier to entry here to get access to the tool, which I think will provide you with a ton of value on day one from the moment that you first fire it up in a trading day. So with
many,
that,
many of you probably spent that on commissions last week.
Yep, that's a very, very good point there. Yeah, in terms of a tool to add to your overall toolkit, this is a pretty low risk one, right? And something that gives you quite a bit of really useful and actionable information. So with that, you know, John, if you have any closing thoughts or comments, I will. How long is the offer good for?
I think until we go through the 20 bots that are listed there.
Yeah, I believe that is the number that was opened up for this specifically. So
you should have over the weekend. You know, and you know, sometimes we're a little bit late taking the link down. So we'll be sending out an email as well.
Yeah.
With the link to the recording and just email info. I'll put this in here too. Just email info@optionhacker.com.
John just dropped the email address in there for our sort of help and account email. So if you have any, if anybody has any questions about the offer specifically or about anything we covered here or just, you know, wants to have a bit of a chat, feel free to reach out to that email address. John and myself both monitor that and any questions that you might have about anything we discussed about options in general, you know, general life advice, though I don't know how much stock you want to put in that from us.
I don't know if I'm the best to be giving general life.
You know, in terms of unusual options activity, we're your guys. Put it that way. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for the questions and for being an attentive and engaged audience. And thank you, of course, to Dave and Anka for having us. And everyone have a fantastic rest of your weekend.
We can do restaurant recommendations, New York and Chicago. We're good at that. Maybe not life advice, but
absolutely. Yeah.
Restaurant recos.
Yeah. Feel free to ask any of those questions too.
I can push you guys some dollar oyster happy hours around New York, maybe Yakitori, even sushi, you know.
Same.
Hey everybody, you guys have a great Saturday. This is really fun. You know, this is the first time James and I have kind of been back involved with Option Hacker again, and we really think it's a great tool, and we're excited to kind of share some more of these types of webinars, information sessions, and discussions with you guys.
Yeah.
So, thanks for bearing with us. This is the first one of these we've done, I think, in a couple of years, but we're excited to be back, and look forward to speaking with you guys all again. So email us with any questions, and until next time, we'll sign off. Everybody have a great Saturday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, John. And thank you, James. It's definitely great to hear back from you guys. And thank you for accepting the invitation to present today at Tech Wizards. And thank you, everyone, for accepting the invitation and spending the time, your Saturday with us. This concludes today's Tech Wizard event. It was brought to you by Market Timing Research and Trade Out Loud. Let me remind you that this event was recorded, and the recording will be sent out as soon as it becomes available. It will also be posted on the Market Timing Research website. David, if you are so kind to type it in here for the audience, and also on podcast, and you have all the links.
There's timingresearch.com is the site, or you can search for Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast network.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys, for attending from all of us here at Market Timing Research and Trade Out Loud. We wish you a great rest of the day and a profitable trading week ahead.